at heavyweights Amazon and Barnes & Noble, which also sell their own e-readers. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we're going to be talking about a number of different items today on the radio program, so I want to get right to it. We're going to be talking about CPAC. We're going to be talking about NASA. We're going to be talking about the Green Dream. I'll explain all those things here in just a second. Let me just tell you, on the first segment of the program today, we will speak with Warren Cole Smith, and Warren is the associate publisher of World Magazine. Warren recently attended the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, events, and he heard most of the presidential candidates speak. He's going to give us a report on where they stand on the issues of importance to Christians. And also, there was a major split at this year's CPAC event over the participation of a gay Republican group called Go Proud. And Warren attended a speech that was given by Eric Metaxas. You may remember that name. He wrote a best-selling book on Dietrich Bonhoeffer's biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And Warren attended a speech by him that was reported to be a rousing speech that he delivered on why conservatives need to stand up for Christian ideas and not just fiscally conservative ideas. So we'll be asking Warren about all of those issues in the first part of the program today. Secondly, in the second segment of the program today, we're going to be speaking with Casey Luskin. He's an attorney at the Discovery Institute, who is part of the legal team representing David Coppedge. And David is a NASA scientist who was recently fired for his religious views, i.e. for handing out a few DVDs to some colleagues about intelligent design. So we'll be speaking with Casey about that case and where it's at, and what the legal team representing the fired NASA scientist are doing at this point, and where that's going. And then on the final segment today, I'm going to speak with Kenneth Green. He's the resident scholar with the American Enterprise Institute, and I'm going to speak with him about President Obama's green technology push, specifically his $2.3 billion in Recovery Act tax credits that are allocated for green manufacturers. Ken says that Europe's green revolution, which has resulted in the tremendous amount of job loss, higher energy prices, and corruption, that all of those things show clearly that the Obama Green Dream will fail in the U.S. here as well. So a full schedule today. Let's go ahead and start the program off with Warren Cole Smith from World Magazine. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Kevin, great to be with you again.
Great to be with you as well, my friend. Interesting things happening in our country and around the world today, for sure. I'm sure you folks at World Magazine are keeping busy from the way that the most recent issue of World Magazine was just chocked full of various articles. But the item I wanted to ask you about was your attendance to the recent CPAC events. I was hoping that you could give us a little snapshot of what took place and what you heard from some of these presidential candidates that were speaking there.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you asking about that first up, because it was really interesting. First of all, CPAC, for some of your listeners who may not know, stands for the Conservative Political Action Conference. They've been holding this conference for about, I think this was its 38th year, the American Conservative Union. puts it on, and it has been sort of the go-to conference for mostly political conservatives over the past few years. So a lot of religious conservatives end up at the event, and in fact, some religious groups end up being sponsoring organizations of the event. The Family Research Council has in the past, for example. However, this year, the Family Research Council and Concerned Women for America boycotted the conference because they allowed Go Proud, which is the gay Republican group, to be one of the sponsoring organizations this year. Mm-hmm. And that created a rift, really, between many of the conservative Christian groups and those that are more aligned with the fiscal conservative side of things. The Heritage Foundation, which is the, I guess you could probably argue, is the largest conservative group in the country, not necessarily a religious group, has not been going to CPAC for a number of years for other reasons, but this year they continued not going and were joined by some of these conservative groups, largely, again, because the gay groups were there.
Hmm. Warren, in the you were able to attend a lot of the speeches. I want to get to that idea of the Go Proud group. But before we do, you were able to hear a lot of the either potential or actually committed presidential candidates for 2012. Obviously, many of them going to this meeting in order to get in front of conservatives to start making some headway. What was your general impression of the crowd for? First of all, the crowd of candidates. Did you see anything unique or anybody of any interest stand out to you among that pack?
Well, it was a really young group at CPAC. There were a lot of college students there and a lot of libertarians there, so it should probably be no surprise that Ron Paul won the straw poll that was held by the participants. Ron Paul got about 30% of the votes in the straw poll that CPAC did, and Mitt Romney got about 25% of the votes there. Of course, Mitt Romney is a Mormon, and many folks who are Christians are, you know, have some concern about his faith and the fact that you know, he is polling so strong, at least early among conservatives. You know, the things that were, I guess, interesting about the presentations, first of all, Kevin, there were about a dozen of the presidential candidates or possible presidential candidates that spoke, including Donald Trump. Donald Trump, of course, everybody knows, you know, the Donald, as it were, the business guy. And what was interesting about Donald Trump was that he was very explicit about being pro-life in his speech. He really kind of went down a list of the issues that conservatives care about and at least said the right words. Now, there are a lot of people who are, you know, not, because he's never held elected office, because he's never had to vote on any of these issues, there were a lot of people in the crowd that really don't believe that he holds some of the, you know, that he holds strongly some of the views that he said he did. In fact, I will say that while Donald Trump was cordially received by the crowd at CPAC, he was actually booed in a couple of places during his speech, which is really unusual for this particular crowd. They normally, even if they disagree with a particular issue, will kind of keep quiet. So the fact that he actually got booed was interesting. Herman Cain, who is the founder of Godfather's Pizza from Atlanta, African-American business guy who has, you know, got a significant personal wealth, has formed an exploratory committee. And he actually polled about 2 to 3% of the vote in the straw poll, which doesn't sound like a lot, but after you get past Mitt Romney and Ron Paul, getting somewhere in the 3 to 5% was actually pretty strong. Hmm. Now, I will say that Huckabee and Palin didn't attend the event, didn't speak. A lot of their supporters weren't there. So they, you know, obviously did not poll that strongly. And I think that's telling, actually, Kevin, that, that the two candidates that many people consider to be the front runners among Christian conservatives, which would be, of course, Sarah Palin and Mike Huckabee, were not even at the event. And that, I think, probably tells you a good bit in and of itself.
What do you think that does tell us?
Well, I think one of the things that it tells you is that we're still really early in the process. John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, was did not speak in a formal part of the didn't have a formal session, but he was honored on one of the banquets on I believe it was Friday night. He was honored by the group, and so he came and said just a few words, not many, but he was later interviewed by the media, and John Boehner said that there was really nobody that was a clear front runner at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that Sarah Palin and Mike Huckabee were there, and they are often considered to be the front runners among social conservatives, the fact that they weren't there really says that they had a lot to lose and nothing to gain by being at this event and maybe coming up, you know, third, fourth, or fifth in the straw poll. So, you know, it's really early. There are a lot of folks. In fact, Dr. Marvin Orlowski, the editor-in-chief of World Magazine, and I sat down a couple of months ago and just made our own list of everybody that is either a has already expressed an interest in the campaign, formed an exploratory committee, or is widely considered to be running, and we came up with more than 20 names at this point. And so it is just like super early. Though I will say, though, you know, on the other hand, that in March, which is just, you know, a few weeks from now, March the 7th, that they're starting to hold roundtables and caucuses and forums in Iowa. The first one is going to be held by the Faith and Family group that Ralph Reed, formerly head of the Christian Coalition, has put together. Mm-hmm. They're expecting about 800 people at an event in Des Moines, which will be a forum for the candidates. So far, there's only been four or five of the candidates commit, Herman Cain being among those that have committed, Rick Santorum, Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota. And by the way, all of these folks that I just mentioned to you also spoke at CPAC, have committed to be at the Iowa Forum. So I think we will start to see things come into a little bit sharper focus probably after March or April, whenever these candidates, or at least these folks that are being talked about as candidates, actually start showing up in Iowa, campaigning, and start building organizations on the ground in places like Iowa and New Hampshire.
It's been my impression, Warren, that many people at ground level, you know, just the folks that I'm rubbing shoulders with and talking about what's taking place, they're a little bit disconcerted that and concerned that a leading candidate has not come to the forefront yet among the GOP. They're getting a little bit nervous that 2012 is coming up quickly, and there's really nobody in that list that I have seen so far, at least, again, among the just at ground level, of anybody being that excited about any candidate to say, you know, wow, this is somebody we really need. This is somebody who can stand up against Barack Obama. This is someone that can clearly articulate the conservative position. They just don't, I don't see anybody really that enthused about any one of those candidates. Do you see the same thing?
Well, I do see that. I think that's absolutely right. But I would also maybe add as a counterbalance to that, that at this point in the election cycle of 2000, for example, you know, in other words, if we reached all the way back to February of 1999, which would be, you know, the equivalent time before the 2000 election, George W. Bush was not even being seriously talked about as a candidate at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, George W. Bush had a disappointing showing in Iowa and New Hampshire. It was really when he won the South Carolina primary that George W. Bush really sort of emerged as a front runner and began to sort of hone his message and to have a message that was palatable to the social conservatives that probably you and I care, you know, those issues that we care most about, and they're probably what most of your listeners care most about. So it is really early, and I would also say, too, that the Republican Party has what some people consider to be sort of a disconcerting habit of anointing or coronating almost their nominee. That was the complaint that many people had about, for example, Bob Dole in 1996, that Bob Dole was kind of the good soldier. He had served his time. He had, come up through the ranks, and he was almost anointed as the nominee and really didn't let the primary process and the rank-and-file voters have much of a say in that. The party machine just kind of anointed him. So I think in some ways, while it is a little disconcerting, it's really a healthy part of the process to actually, let the campaign season unfold, let these folks, sort of earn their stripes in the ground battles that the primaries represent and really focus their message. So I'm not terribly concerned at this point, and I think, candidly, that a lot of social conservatives should not be. The other side of this, too, Kevin, that I would mention is that while you've got a few, folks that are kind of on the kind of outliers, like a Donald Trump, for example, who we're not sure where they stand. If you look at the top dozen or so candidates, which would be Tim Pawlenty, Governor of Minnesota, Mitch Daniels, Governor of Indiana, Sarah Palin, Mike Huckabee, these are all candidates. And I just named a few. Rick Santorum, former senator from Pennsylvania. These are all candidates that are just rock solid on the life issue, rock solid on the marriage issue. So it's not like we're talking about candidates who really fundamentally disagree on these issues, and I think that will ultimately be a good sign for social conservatives as we get closer and closer to the Iowa and New Hampshire primaries.
Yeah, all those names that you mentioned, I understand about their position on very important issues. It just seems that then they seem to be lacking in other areas, just the gravitas to be able to do the job or the experience really to bring to bear with those positions. It's just like we're looking for a little bit more. And as for the Dole type, and also I would even put in that same camp McCain type, it comes across to the many people as just the status quo, the good old boy GOP network, and there just seem to be, in my opinion anyways, they just seem to be tired of that, and they want something with a little bit more, somebody with a little bit more that they can get behind a little bit more aggressively and be excited about that candidate.
I think that's right.
Let me switch gears with you just a little bit. We had talked about in the beginning about this Go Proud group that ends up coming to CPAC. I think they may have been there last time as well. Word now is out that WND, WorldNet Daily, is taking credit for that they will not be invited the next time to CPAC. But my thought here when I first heard this is, what in the world is the GOP thinking that they would even invite them at this time where we're looking for something different when, part of the one of the planks in the platform is about marriage? And what are they thinking? What possible advantage do they think there would be by inviting a group like this to participate in CPAC?
Well, that's a really great question. I think it's important to note that it is not actually, CPAC is not an official party event. It is not an event put on by the Republican Party, but one that is put on by the American Conservative Union. Mm-hmm. And the American Conservative Union has been led by a man named David Keene, who, while he is a fiscal conservative and also is fairly strong on other issues too, for example, David is on the board of the National Rifle Association, so he's real strong on the Second Amendment. And in fact, David has just been named to a one-year post as the president of the National Rifle Association, so he has stepped down from his leadership role at the American Conservative Union, and a man named Al Cardenas is going to be taking David's place there. Al, I had a chance to visit with a little bit at CPAC. He's a solid social conservative, and I would say that it is more Al and the influence of social conservatives like Al at the American Conservative Union, and not necessarily WorldNet Daily, though I can appreciate that they, want to take credit for it and are also, probably did have a role because of their coverage in making this happen. I would say that it is really more the debate that has gone on within the American Conservative Union and Al's new leadership there that will probably result in GoProud not being invited back if that end up actually being the case. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet. We don't know whether GoProud is going to come next year or not. But as far as what they're thinking, you know, that's a really good question. That's a question that really came up repeatedly over the course of the couple of days that, you know, that I was there. But most of the folks that I chatted with were social conservatives, though not exclusively. I talked, spent a good bit of time with Grover Norquist, who is also on the board of the American Conservative Union. And Grover has been one of those folks that has been actively, supporting getting, folks that are not necessarily social conservatives to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think their position, and this is not one that I advocate, but I will try to represent it as honestly as I can, their position is that if you just look at social conservatives in this country, that you end up with about 30 to 35% of the vote, and that if you're going to win elections, that you've got to have a coalition, that what was famously called during the Ronald Reagan era the three-legged stool, which is social conservatives plus fiscal conservatives plus national defense conservatives all working together, putting some of their differences aside and working together to actually get candidates elected. Again, this is not a position that I advocate. This is not a position that social conservatives generally advocate, but that is the logic there and why they want to bring in, you know, other folks that are not, that don't necessarily share the social conservative position.
Yeah, the only issue is that if you, since that percentage is less than what they need in order for victory, they can't afford either to alienate their base. And one way to throw a bucket of cold water on the enthusiasm of social conservatives is to all of a sudden send a mushy message about just how committed you are to conservative, socially conservative causes. And once they did that, that hurt them big time. People started thinking, wait a second, this is the same old, same old. It really took a little bit of steam out of a movement there. Let me ask you about Eric Metaxas. You mentioned that he gave a pretty rousing speech. I haven't been able to hear that speech yet. I'm going to look on the internet, see if I can get a copy of it. But what was the basic gist of his message?
Well, I think Eric Metaxas would have been a spokesman for Kevin, the position that you just said, which is that if conservatism doesn't stand fundamentally for Christian ideas, then it's really not worth standing for. In fact, Eric said explicitly that if Donald Trump is a conservative, then I'm not sure I am, and that if organizations like Go Proud are now a part of the conservative movement, then I don't want to be a part of the conservative movement. Mm. And that was a pretty bold thing to say at an event that was really the flagship event for the conservative movement.
Yes.
I will say that Eric was bold and if you will, even prophetic in his voice and tone at this event, and even though he was, to my knowledge, the only one who explicitly said this, so it was kind of a minority view, at least on the platform, it was a very powerful speech, and he got a rousing response. He interrupted several times throughout his speech with applause. He did not get a full standing ovation from the crowd, though. About a third of the crowd actually gave him a standing ovation, and about two-thirds of the crowd did not. So it was kind of interesting the way he's received. And you mentioned, Kevin, that you could not find Eric's speech on the Internet. What's interesting to me is that while almost all of the other speeches given at CPAC are on the Internet at this point, so far I think you're right. Eric's has not been posted on the CPAC website, so it'll be really interesting to see whether that speech ends up being on the website or not in the days ahead.
Yeah, I just was typing it in here. I see that YouTube lists it, but I haven't actually tried it to see that if the entire speech is there. I may have to go somewhere else other than the CPAC website. Warren, thank you very much for visiting with us and bringing us up to speed on these important events. You guys at World Magazine, as I say every week when I speak to somebody from there, you're doing an excellent job of keeping us informed. A lot happening over there, and we just really appreciate it. It's so much easier now that World Magazine is there doing so much of the brunt of this work for us.
Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be on with you again. Appreciate that good word.
Okay. That was Warren Cole Smith. Warren is the associate publisher of World Magazine. And we're going to return in just a couple moments. When we come back from the break, we'll be picking up with the second segment of our program today. I'm going to be speaking with attorney Casey Luskin. He's an attorney with the Discovery Institute who is part of the legal team representing David Coppedge, a NASA scientist who was recently fired for his religious beliefs. And so we'll be visiting with him, finding out what's taking place in this situation and what the legal team is doing. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
This is Dr. Susan Stegall of Integrative Health Group. Did you know that allopathic medicine does not have a test to detect or measure inflammation? Yet inflammation plays a central role in diseases and hastens aging as well. So controlling inflammation is critical to your health. Whether it is mild or severe, proper nutrients provide safe and effective measures to help lower the flame and allow recovery. To find out more about this and other curable problems, join me each Tuesday at 12:30 for Healthy Alternatives.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
What does the Bible teach me to expect of God if I'm His beloved child? How does our adoption change our attitude toward history and the church? These are some of the subjects we'll consider as we study the doctrine of adoption at this year's Philadelphia Conference on Reformed Theology. We'll also see how practical it is for our lives. For more information, visit AllianceNet.org or call 1-800-488-1888. 1-800-488-1888.
Okay, kids, the campfire's out. Let's hit the road.
Dad, the fire's not out. It's still smoking.
No, close enough.
Come on, Dad, do your homework. If it's too hot to touch, then it's too hot to leave.
I knew that.
You're never too young to get your smoky on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference.
Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back to the second segment of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. Again, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we were just speaking a moment ago with World Magazine, and even more specifically with Warren Cole Smith from World Magazine. We're going to switch gears slightly here and talk about a news item about a NASA scientist who was recently fired for his religious belief. I say switch gears slightly because World Magazine actually did a story about this. One of their reporters, their Washington bureau chief, Edward Lee Pitts, wrote a story called Design Flaw. And it says, news, a fired NASA employee says that he was let go because of his belief in intelligent design. Let me just read to you a couple of lines from this article in the latest issue of World Magazine. It says this, on Christmas Eve, 1968, as a Super Bowl-sized viewing audience watched on television, the crew of the moon-orbiting Apollo 8 took turns reading from the creation story in the first chapter of Genesis. You remember that? That took place in 1968. Here was the astronauts reading and taking turns reading from the book of Genesis as they were orbiting the moon. It goes on in the article to say this, David Coppedge remembers that moment. He also remembers astronaut Buzz Aldrin quoting Psalm 8 as the Apollo 11 mission returned in July of 1969. Quote, when I consider the heavens and the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, that which thou hath ordained. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Unquote. That taken, of course, from Psalm 8. So he remembers both of these two cases, 1968, 1969, where people were, astronauts were reading and quoting from the Word of God. Now let's fast forward to 2011. He has now been let go, he says, been fired from NASA, not because he read passages of Scripture publicly, but because he simply gave some colleagues some DVDs, and the DVDs were about intelligent design. At least that's the way I understand it from these stories that I've been reading. Let's go to the phone line. Here we've got Casey Luskin with us on the line. He's an attorney. He's not actually representing this astronaut, but he is advising the team that is representing them. But Casey is with the American Enterprise Institute, and it's great to have you, or I'm sorry, the Discovery Institute. And Casey, it's great to have you with us on the program today.
Thanks so much for having me. And one other note, David Kopich actually is not an astronaut. He's a high-level computer specialist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. But essentially, the other parts of what you're saying is correct. He was demoted and fired for talking about intelligent design in the workplace.
Tell us the story there, then. He's been, from what I understand, he's been talking about his religious beliefs. He's been there for many years and has never kept it secret, but he has also never tried to proselytize or force his religion upon anybody, the way I understand it. Is that true?
Well, yeah. David Kopich joined NASA's Cassini mission to Saturn in 1997. The Cassini mission is the unmanned space probe that has sent back many of the beautiful photographs of Saturn that we've seen over the last few years. And in 2000, he was promoted to actually the team lead system administrator, which means he essentially was in charge of the team that kept the computers running on this very important NASA mission. Mm-hmm. However, in 2009, it was discovered by one of his supervisors that he would occasionally share with his coworkers pro-intelligent design DVDs. Now, Mr. Kopich believes that intelligent design is a scientific viewpoint. Essentially, it's a scientific alternative to neo-Darwinism. So he feels that what he was talking about was entirely scientific, but it really doesn't matter. The bottom line here is that JPL's supervisor hauled Mr. Kopich into his office, accused him of pushing his religion, and ordered him to stop talking about intelligent design. Now, obviously, employers have the right to regulate the speech of their employees in the workplace. The problem here is that there was no prior policy that said you can't talk about intelligent design, and in fact, NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, which is a taxpayer-funded entity, openly allowed its scientists to attack and critique intelligent design. And that's fine. They should have the freedom to critique intelligent design if that's what they believe.
Sure.
In this case, however, when a computer tech, David Kopich, was speaking in favor of intelligent design, he was punished and prohibited from speaking about it further. So he feels like he was discriminated against and faced essentially disparate treatment, and is the victim of discrimination here.
Now, JPL says, no, it wasn't anything like that. All it was downsizing. Everybody knows that NASA's funding has been cut, and he was just let go as part of downsizing. How do you answer that?
Well, sure. Well, first off, David Kopich was one of the most senior members of the team that oversees the computers on the Cassini mission. So in a normal downsizing type environment, he's certainly not the first person that you would expect to go.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Kopich essentially had a sterling record at JPL until it was discovered that he was sharing Pro-ID DVDs with his coworkers. And at that time, he was then demoted and he was punished. They put a letter of reprimand in his file, which they later actually took out of his file because they admitted that it went too far. But it was only at that time, only after he was, essentially punished for talking about intelligent design, that they finally started to say, negative things about his workplace conduct, and they claimed that he was creating a hostile work environment. Now, if you get to know Mr. Kopich, he's a very mild-mannered guy. He's sort of like your stereotypical, computer nerd kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He's not pushy, and he claims, at least, that if his coworkers were not interested in talking about intelligent design, or if they were not interested in the ID of videos that he was offering them, he would drop them out, and he wouldn't push it further. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with talking about intelligent design. design. After all, part of JPL's mission is to study the question of origins and how did we get here. That's part of their official mission. So you would think that, you know, nobody would have any problem with him talking about intelligent design in the workplace. But in this case, it's clear that there are supervisors there that have an animus against intelligent design. They already demoted him on paper because of his expression of the pro-ID viewpoint. So I think it's pretty clear why they actually let him go just a few weeks ago.
Mm. Now, are you advocating that, that people hearing about this story should contact somebody in order to let them know that they're not happy about this decision?
We are, and I appreciate you mentioning that. We're recommending and asking that folks contact the head of NASA, Charles Bolden, to let them know how they feel about Mr. Coppedge essentially being forced to shut up and censored from talking about intelligent design in the workplace, especially when other scientists are given free rein to attack intelligent design. Charles Bolden is NASA's head administrator, and if it's all right, I can quickly give out his contact information, his public NASA email address here.
Yeah, I think that that would be helpful. We'll just give folks just a second to grab a pencil or get ready for the number or the email address. Let me just say that people can find out more about this information probably by going out to the Discovery Institute's website. And if they want to go out there, they can find out more about, you know, where this case is going and keep up to date with what's taking place. And I think that that would be helpful. I think that there is a place where the lawsuit is mentioned. Was it mentioned in for more information on the lawsuit, according to what I have here in front of me, it says go to www.evolutionnews.org. So we can point people there to just keep up to date on this this particular issue. Go ahead, Casey, and give us the information about who we should specifically contact and what that number is.
Sure, and don't forget that NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab is a taxpayer-funded entity. So if you don't want your taxpayer money being used to fund discrimination against intelligent design, then contact Charles Bolden, who is NASA's head administrator. His email address is charles.bolden, that's B-O-L-D-E-N as in Nancy, charles.bolden@nasa.gov. So that's the email, charles.bolden@nasa.gov, or his phone number is 202-358-1010. Again, that's 202-358-1010. Make your views known. I mean, you the public are the patrons and the funders of NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab. Let them know if you don't like the fact that essentially your money is being used to fund discrimination against intelligent design.
Well, thank you very much, Casey, for bringing this to our attention and writing about this and advising this group. It is something that we're certainly interested in, and we don't want our tax money to be used this way to discriminate against people. We're not trying to coerce or force somebody into believing what we believe. We just don't want the viewpoint of intelligent design or creationism to be marginalized, and we certainly don't want to pay for that to take place. So we thank you very much for your efforts and the efforts there at the Discovery Institute. We really appreciate the work you guys are doing.
Well, thanks for having me, and we appreciate you getting the word out on this.
Okay, thank you very much. That was Casey Luskin. Casey is actually helping out with advising the group that is defending this fired scientist, the computer technician, and or actually a scientist, computer scientist there at the Jet Propulsion Lab for NASA, who's been fired because of his views on intelligent design. Let's go to another story item that I wanted to get to today as well, and this is the idea of what I referred to in my blog this morning as a green dream by the Obama administration. This final segment, I want to speak here with Kenneth Green. He's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and I want to talk with him about President Obama's green technology push. If you watch the State of the Union address or just about any time that the president speaks now, there is this constant talk about green technology. The latest one at the State of the Union was about this ridiculous project of a bullet train. Mr. President, we're not interested in riding the bus. We're not interested in some sort of European style of train service to get around the country. We're happy with our cars. And not only that, but this technology is a loss. It's green technology that's going to put the U.S. further into the red. And so I referred to it as just a green dream by the Obama administration. Specifically, though, recently, he has proposed a $2.3 billion in the Recovery Act tax credits to be allocated for green manufacturers. And our guest today, Mr. Kenneth Green, he says that Europe's green revolution, so-called, has resulted in a tremendous amount of job loss, higher energy prices, and increased corruption, and that shows clearly that the Obama Green Dream will fail miserably here in the United States. So joining me now by phone is Kenneth Green. Kenneth, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Talk to us a little bit. Is this the proposed $2.3 billion towards, given to the green manufacturers, or is it actually taking place?
Well, I mean, if they're allowed to go through with their budget, this all remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But, if they're allowed to go through with the budget that includes it, it'll be spent. If the Republicans manage to claw it back get a budget through that doesn't allow for that to be spent, it won't. So it's all up to the next couple of weeks to months to mm-hmm. see what the budget is like.
Tell us about what your research found, your assessment of what happened overseas in Europe, in Spain, and other places, Germany, Denmark, other places where this type of policy has been put forth. What did you find?
Right. Well, my study has two parts. One is it examines the question of whether or not governments can create jobs. Because the claim is that the green technology and the green, quote, investing is going to improve our economy and create green jobs. And basic economic theory argues that governments don't create jobs. They take money from one group of people, and they use it to create jobs for another group of people. But on net, there's less jobs when the government is done with its maneuvering, with its picking and choosing of who gets to work in what sector and who doesn't. And then I looked at the experience of Europe, as you said, where the countries that have gone for this idea that, well, if we go forward with a lot of green energy, it'll create a whole bunch of jobs in replacing the old-fashioned fossil fuel energy. And so I looked at what they did and what they experienced. And studies have come out showing that, in fact, the basic theory holds true, which is that when governments try to pick and choose what technologies and where jobs go, jobs are lost on net in the general economy. So in Spain, a study found that for every green job, quote, created in green energy, 2.2 jobs were destroyed in the general economy. Hmm. In Italy, it was more like 5 jobs destroyed for every 1 created. And in both cases, there was corruption is absolutely rife. To give you the most absurd example, in Spain, some solar photovoltaic energy producers were selling power at a subsidized rate into the grid at night.
Hmm.
Of course, it's hard to generate solar energy at night.
Yeah, it's a little difficult. Hey, this is all part of what's called the Energy and Environmental Outlook. Is that a publication or a book, or what exactly?
AEI
is it?
Publishes these. They're basically short studies. They're roughly 5,000 words to 4,000, 5,000 words. And AEI publishes them on a periodic basis, generally speaking, for the Outlook series for a year. You can find them at our website, www.aei.org.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically just a short policy study.
Okay, I noticed that this is even available on that website. Again, that website is www.aei.org, and it's available on that website as a PDF download as well. It's called The Myth of Green Energy Jobs, The European Experience. Well, you find that this failed miserably then in Europe. I mean, are any of the lawmakers over here in the States then taking notice of this? You write in Spain, for instance, that since 2000, $771,000 approximately has been spent on each green job, including subsidies of more than $1,350,000 per job in the wind industry. Well,
right.
Of course, if you throw enough money at something, you're going to get some sort of result back. But obviously, it's not economical.
That's right. Well, you take that amount of money out of the general economy. So whereas if the general economy would have produced a job for $100,000 and you're creating jobs that cost $700,000 each, you have to assume you're killing a bunch of jobs that would have been created with that capital in the general economy.
Mm-hmm.
Some people here, I think, are aware of this. Conservatives are aware of it to a certain extent, although for political reasons, they're unwilling to really speak the truth, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They're unwilling to say, you know, no, we don't want wind and solar power because they're not economic. Instead, they hide behind silly things like all of the above. They want an energy plan of all of the above. My answer is, if you go to the doctor with a headache and he offers you everything from aspirin to brain surgery, you're not going to say, I want all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're going to pay.
So
I think the Republicans are sort of hiding from the public because green energy still polls well. Green energy, green jobs, clean energy, those phrases poll well. And last year, the environmentalists did this kind of polling and told their people to avoid the real words for what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And use these sort of made-up words.
We've got the Obama administration, of course, talking about huge subsidies being given to the green car movement, you know, the Volt and items like this. I think the Volt came out at $40,000+ for a Volt. Wasn't that the price tag?
Yes, about $41,000. For a Volt, and you can get a $7,500 tax credit.
$7,500. So we're paying, as American taxpayers, we got to pay people $7,500 just to get them to be interested in the Volt. And there's no proof yet. There's no good data to tell us whether or not this is really going to do anything to clean up the environment or, you know, they've got to plug them in somewhere. And I think most of the electricity in the country right now is being produced through fossil fuels, and so it could actually cause more coal burning to keep the cars going. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's not just that we pay the $7,500 in a tax credit. There are also subsidies for installing home charging stations. There are state subsidies as well that go in addition to the federal subsidies, and there are state and federal programs to build charging stations for these vehicles all over the place, because after all, if you can only go 50 miles in your car and you need to go, you know, 200 or 300, you're going to have to stop and charge it for 5 to 6 hours at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were paying a lot of subsidies, far more than you see on the surface. Plus, we paid subsidies to help with the research to develop the cars in the first place.
I imagine there's got to be certain types of repair companies that somebody that knows how to deal with these types of cars. You're not going to be able to take it to your average mechanic and say, hey, now I've got this one that plugs in. Go ahead and repair. You know, it's not working correctly. So there may be subsidies then to certain type of repair industries. Is that correct as well?
Well, my expectation is these vehicles are only going to be available for lease because people would never want to pay the full purchase price.
Mm.
And that the dealers will do the repairs and keep very quiet about whether they are or aren't changing battery packs and what the life expectancy is of the battery packs. Because you know, GM, which makes the Volt, Government Motors, isn't going to be the one that, you know, pops Obama's green car bubble.
Mm-hmm.
by revealing what happens performance-wise as these things are move into the niche market of wealthy environmentalists who have a second car.
Mm-hmm. People would say to me, let me just voice what I would hear critics saying, say, well, now wait a second. You know, of course, we've got too much pollution in this country, and a lot of that comes through emissions coming out of our cars. Why are you guys so against something like this? What's the common sense solution that we should be looking for rather than this environmental, radical environmentalist agenda that we see put forth through the Obama policies?
Right. Well, I think first and foremost, we have to be aware of reality, which is that air quality in the United States has improved hugely, massively over the last 30 years, to the point that now air pollution concentrations are so low, only a tiny number of Americans are affected by the conventional air pollutants that come out of a car. Vehicle pollutants, I think, are down well over 90% from what they were in the 1970s. So the reality we have to understand is we have already made massive strides in cleaning up the environment, reducing toxic exposures, and so forth. And the regulations that are already in the pipeline with regard to future reductions, we'll see that number so low as to be almost unmeasurable.
Mm.
The the reason we're seeing these kind of cars come forward is because the environmentalists are sliding in the greenhouse gas agenda into what used to be normal pollution controls. So they're trying to get people to believe that CO2, which you exhale and plants take in and to grow, is a normal is a pollutant of the same sort as particulate matter, which could give you lung cancer. And so they're trying. This is a stealthy way to get greenhouse gas emissions covered as regular pollutions.
Well, I just want to thank you very much for writing this this piece of work that you did here on energy and environmental outlook. And remind our listening audience that they can view the entire report out at your website. And again, that website is www.aei.org. And I want to thank our special guest today, AEI environmental scientist Kenneth Green, for taking the time out to visit with us today to bring us up to speed on these issues. Thank you, Kenneth.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
All righty. So, like I said, you can go out there and read that entire report. One of the reasons why I brought this up and why I do bring it up on our Wednesday programs is because at our church in Traveler's Rest, the church that I pastor is Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, and each Wednesday night for a 12-week period, we've been looking at a DVD series called Resisting the Green Dragon. And that series is all about what is the biblical perspective about the environment? How should we look at the environment? We're contrasting two different worldviews. One, a radical environmentalist worldview, one that oftentimes devalues human life, one that really exalts the planet and exalts a pagan view of the planet, really, that we should be worshiping the planet. That's that radical environmentalist view. And contrasting that with a solid biblical view on stewardship, biblical stewardship, on how should we look at the earth, how should we care for the earth that God has placed us on, without delving into these other pagan viewpoints that I was just alluding to. So we've been watching that each and every week. We will do so again tonight. We're about three or four segments in out of the 12-week segments that we're looking at, and so you're certainly welcome to join us. If you want some information about where we're at out there in Traveler's Rest, let me go ahead and give you the directions now, but you can also send me an email at kevin@knowingthetruth.org. That's kevin@knowingthetruth.org, and I'd be happy to give you even more detailed directions. We're located about 4 miles past Furman University on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. So if you just go out Highway 25, we're right on the corner of Highway 25 and Blue Ridge Drive. Blue Ridge is just a small side street there, and we're located right on that corner. And so we're one block past Tigerville Road on Highway 25. We're going to start tonight at 6:30 each and every Wednesday night. We go from 6:30 until about 7:30, 8 o'clock at the latest, and we'll dismiss before then. And so we watch the DVD. We have a time of discussion afterwards, and then we have a word of prayer and dismiss the group. And so we'd be happy to have you come there along with us and participate in that event. In fact, let me tell you just a little bit about our other services as well. Just so you're aware of what we're doing there at Mountain Bridge, if you happen to be looking for a good Reformed church in the area, we'd love to have you come out and visit with us. Our Sunday morning services in our Sunday school, which begins at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning, we've been doing a study on the doctrines of grace and looking at the doctrines of grace in the Scriptures. Not just can they be found during the time of the Reformation, but can they be found in the teaching of the prophets in the Old Testament Scripture, and can they be found in the writings of the apostles in the New Testament Scriptures? So we've been looking at that. We've been the book of Genesis, just finished up with Genesis. We're now looking at Exodus and going to go through the entire first five books, the books of the law or the Pentateuch, and look and say, can we find the doctrines of grace there presented in that series of books? And so that's what we're looking at. in our Sunday Sunday school. In our Sunday morning service, we've been in a study on Psalm 119. Psalm 119, have been doing a verse-by-verse study. We just finished up with the 17th stanza, so we'll be launching into the 18th stanza this upcoming week. There's 22 stanzas totally in that psalm, in that chapter, and so we'll be happy to have you come out for that lesson on Sunday school. In the evening, we meet over at Shepherd's Care Assisted Living Facility, and I typically do a message over there, preach a message over there that relates to something that we discussed in the morning, but something different for the residents of Shepherd's Care and the other folks that come in to visit with us as well. We meet there at 6 o'clock on Sunday evening. That's right on the corner of Pleasantburg Drive and Rutherford Road, right here in Greenville, and so we would love to have you attend that with us as well. In all of those cases, if you want some more information, just simply send me an email. My email address is kevin@knowingthetruth.org. That's K-E-V-I-N at knowingthetruth.org. Remember, the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing